Chapter 1. Was it the end of my dream, or just the beginning? Whichever it was, I knew something was wrong. Mom was shaking my shoulder and calling my name. Jacob. Jacob. My mom hadn't come out of her room in a month. It had been much longer since she had said my name out loud. Mom? I squinted against the light of the bare bulb in the lamp. My clock read 7:33 a.m., but it felt like the middle of the night. Hurry, she said. We're leaving. She turned and left the room. What? I mumbled, still up to my neck in sleep. Leaving? Through my open door, I saw my mom pick up two suitcases and walk toward the front door. I felt the air pressure in the apartment change. Outside sounds moved freely into the house. A barking dog, a faraway siren, the soft static of the city. I felt Mom leave. Mom? She hadn't left the apartment in nearly 2 months. Mom! A feeling of panic swept me. I jumped out of bed and ran into the front room. The door was wide open. I spotted her walking through the parking lot toward Occidental Avenue, a suitcase hanging from each hand. This had to be a dream. Can you vomit in a dream? I gagged. Bitter, hot stomach juice burned the back of my throat. I opened my mouth to shout. Mom! Was all that came out, weak and full of questions. I stepped out to run after her, but then I noticed Millie over in number 139 watching from her front room window. Her mouth hung open as she looked at Mom, and then at me. I realized I was in my underwear. I ran back to my room and pulled on cutoffs and a t-shirt. One sock was balled up by my bed. I pulled it on. I didn't see the other one, so I put on my tennis shoes without it. Then I sprinted out of the apartment. At the sidewalk, I looked both ways. Mom was gone. "Where's she going?" Millie trotted up beside me. She was in a robe and flip-flops, the kind with the fuzzy straps. Millie, who had just immigrated from Ghana, was the nearest thing we had to a friend. She was the one who had inquired about Mom when she started getting sick. She never did more than inquire, but that was something. "I don't know," I said. She woke me up and said we were leaving. My throat burned as I talked. "And she leave without you?" Millie asked. "No," Millie's eyes widened. "She didn't leave without me, but I don't know where she went." "It gonna be all right," she said. "You go find that woman. She needs you." "Which way?" I shouted the words and didn't wait for an answer. I turned left and started running. "The bus station," Millie yelled. She said it like she suddenly knew. The bus station was the other direction. I turned and ran back the way I came. Millie grinned like she had won the lottery. "Poor people always go to the bus station when they leave town," she said as I passed. "Although some hitchhike," she yelled after me. I ran past the graffiti-covered wall of Drage's print shop and turned the corner. My mother was waiting there. She stood right in the middle of the sidewalk like time had stopped, and she was frozen there, mid-step. I only avoided running over her with a sidestep and a twirl. I banged up against a parked car, triggering the alarm. The honk, honk, honk shattered the silence of the quiet street. The wind to the apartment above the print shop slammed open. A skinny man wearing only his boxers leaned out and yelled. "Get away from my car before I call the police," he added colorful words that I didn't appreciate around my mom. I waved at him and ran to catch up with Mom. She had taken off with quick, determined steps. She hadn't even looked up to see if I was okay. "Mom," I caught up with her and asked, "where are we going?" I said it casually, as if she hadn't stopped talking to me a month ago. She ignored me and walked on. "I know you hear me," I said. "You have to tell me where we're going." She blinked. That's all. She looked sick. She looked really sick. In the darkness of her bedroom, I hadn't noticed so much, but out here in the daylight, it showed. She was pale. She was skinny. Dark bags hung under her eyes. Her hair hung in oily strings past her cheeks to her shoulders. I was embarrassed to admit it, even to myself, but she smelled bad. "Mom?" I waited 2 seconds and repeated. "Mom?" After repeating this 10 times, I almost believed she really couldn't hear me. Then I got angry. "Marie!" I yelled. Something happened then. She straightened her back a little and jerked her shoulders a fraction of an inch. Something told me she hadn't liked that. I tried again. "Marie!" I got no response this time. I wanted to grab Mom and make her look at me, but I was afraid to touch her. Instead, I grabbed one of the suitcases she was carrying and stopped. I expected her to turn and confront me. She just let go and kept going without missing a step. I stood there, clutching the old, battered suitcase in both hands, watching her walk away. I threw the suitcase down on the sidewalk. Not satisfied, I kicked it. The latches sprang open, and the contents spilled out. Jeans, shirts, and underwear laid there in a pile. These were her things. I had grabbed her suitcase. It embarrassed me to have Mom's personal things exposed in public. As I knelt down and began shoving them back into the suitcase, I felt something stiff that wasn't fabric. It was a card. On the front was a picture of a bouquet of wild flowers. It said, "Although Mother's Day only comes one day a year." I already knew what it said on the inside, but I opened it anyway. "I feel the same way about you every day of the year." Below that, in my happy handwriting, was, "I love you, Jacob." I had given her this on Mother's Day this year. Why was this in the suitcase? Feeling a small spark of hope, I put the card back in the suitcase on top of her clothes. I leaned on the lid to get the latches to snap, and then ran after her, lugging that suitcase along. I had a hard time keeping up with her. The suitcase bounced against my leg with each step. I was sorry I had grabbed it. Mom walked with a determination that frightened me. After a month in bed, I didn't understand this sudden energy. She wouldn't tell me what we were doing, but people go to the Greyhound bus station for only one purpose, to leave town. I knew this, but we didn't have anywhere to go. I grew up in Sacramento. The apartment we had just left was the only home I could remember. We didn't have any relatives in the world. Mom needed help. I had known that for a long time, but I didn't know what to do. Now that she was acting even crazier, I felt desperate. I looked around the street. It was almost empty at this hour. A man rode a bicycle toward us. He wore a helmet and sunglasses. Blue and yellow stripes broke up the black of his spandex shorts. He leaned over his handlebars, concentrating on each stroke of his legs as he passed. I noticed a police cruiser coming up the street from behind us. I could drop my suitcase and wave my arms. They would stop, but then what? I could tell them that Mom was sick and doing something crazy. If they believed me, they would grab Mom and handcuff her. They would take her away from me. I didn't want anyone touching Mom. I didn't want anyone taking her away from me. The police cruiser passed as we turned the corner. The bus depot was halfway up the block. In the depot, there were people here and there, sleeping on the seats, using their bags as pillows. One looked like a street person, taking advantage of the walls and roof. He had one end of a red ribbon tied to his wrist, and the other end tied to a tired-looking baby stroller filled with plastic bags. Mom walked straight to the ticket counter. There were 3 people in front of her. The 2 in front of us were together.
"I told you we should have took a plane," said a man with a mustache that curled over his upper lip and almost into his mouth. His face had deep creases in it, but he didn't look old.
"Yeah, and who's gonna pay for that, huh? Who's paying for your bus ticket?"
This guy was tall and wide. He wore red suspenders to hold up his faded pinstripe suit pants.
"On a bus, you have to travel with such weird people," said the mustache man.
He quit talking when we stepped up behind him. Mom and I hadn't been there 30 seconds when both men shifted their weight uncomfortably. As if on cue, they both glanced back at us. I saw Mustache Man wrinkle his nose.
"See,"
he said softly, but loud enough.
"Shut up,"
said the big man. I stared a hole through the back of Mustache Man's head, daring him to turn around and wrinkle his nose again. An older lady, pulling a bag on wheels, stepped up behind us. She was lively for so early in the morning. She took my glance as an invitation to talk.
"I get so excited to travel. I'm going to ride the bus all the way to Brooklyn to visit my son. I never take a plane, can't see any detail from up there. Anyway, you just end up crashing and burning." She was impossibly happy. Where are you going?
I looked at her, then at Mom. Mom stared straight ahead. Her eyes were focused and determined. She wasn't going to answer. That was for sure. I looked back at the lady. My mom is sick. She needs help. I don't know where she thinks she's taking us, but we will probably die together there. That's what I wanted to say. All I did was shrug. The impossible happiness left her face, and she looked confused. The two men walked away with their tickets, and Mom stepped up to the window. "To Shawnee, Idaho," she said.
"You're cutting it close," the ticket man said. "The bus is just pulling in. One way or round trip?"
"One way." "One way means you can't come back, right?" I glanced back at the lady. She smiled and nodded at me. She seemed happy that one of us knew where we were going.
292-33, said the man.
I watched in amazement as Mom pulled three $100 bills out of her pocket and laid them on the counter. I thought of the eviction letters we had gotten. I thought of the empty cupboards in the kitchen. My stomach was aching right then. The man gave her back $7.67 and the tickets.
"Number 3, he said,
indicating where the bus would park. A million questions ran through my head. How long had she had this money? Her unemployment check stopped coming 3 months ago. Why had she let us starve? How long had she been planning this? Then one question floated to the top. Idaho? Had she said Idaho? A big, sleek greyhound bus with tinted windows pulled into the stop. I heard the hiss of air as it put on its brakes. Mom got there before the bus doors opened. The driver, a skinny fellow with a bad front tooth and a comb-over, asked her to step back while the others got off. Only one person got off. The bus driver opened the cargo door and helped the passenger find his bag. He looked at Mom.
"Can I load your bags?"
Mom took my bag from me before I could think and gave them to the bus driver. The sight of him putting our bags in the bus set panic off in my stomach.
"I'm not going to Idaho," I said angrily.
The bus driver glanced up as he loaded the suitcases. Mom didn't respond. She handed the bus driver the tickets.
"I'm not going unless you tell me why."
"Okay, you can board now," the bus driver said.
He pretended he didn't hear my conversation. I stayed where I was as Mom walked toward the bus door.
"I won't get on unless you tell me something. Anything."
She stepped into the bus.
"Why won't you talk to me, Mom?"
The bus driver looked uncomfortable.
"You coming?" he said.
"No." I walked back into the depot and sat on the bench near the door. I almost cried out when the bus driver got on the bus and shut the door. I could see dark silhouettes through the windows. I wasn't sure which one was Mom, but none of them were moving toward the front. The doors opened again. I breathed. It was the bus driver who got off, not Mom. He didn't look happy. Stepping inside the depot door, he said,
"It's none of my business, but I'm not going to just leave you here. Either your mom gets off or you get on. Otherwise, I'm calling the police."
I didn't move. I sat there thinking about the police option again. I could tell them that Mom was sick and taking me to Idaho for no good reason. They would say, "So what?" That's what they would say. The bus driver sighed and said,
"Why does this always happen on my shift?"
He looked at me hard, then reached into his pocket for his phone and stepped out the door. There was the chance the police would listen to me. If they did, they would grab Mom and pull her off the bus. I didn't want them touching Mom. I jumped up and ran out the door.
"I'm coming," I said.
"Thank you, God," said the bus driver.
I saw him put not a phone, but his wallet back into his pocket. Mom was sitting halfway back near the aisle. For the first time that day, her eyes met mine, just for an instant. She had seen me. It was almost enough. She looked away as I slid into the window seat next to her. Leaning my forehead against the window, I let some of the tears in my throat make it to my eyes. Oh, Mom.